Welcome to the Titanium Economy Podcast, where we showcase leaders from across the industrial sector as they share their valuable experiences, expertise, strategies, and more. These in-depth conversations with the brains behind the businesses lift the lid on how success is cultivated within the titanium economy.
Today we have Anand Sanghi, the head of Americas at Vertiv with us. Anand, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Just a few tidbits about Anand. Anand's been in this role since 2023. Before that, Anand led Vertiv organization in Asia. Anand, as I understand, you led Japan, South Korea, you led Southeast Asia, Australasia, India, quite a large portfolio. And before that, you were at multiple different roles in Emerson, and before that, Copeland.
Yeah.
Well, Anand has a degree in engineering from IIT and an MBA from IIM.
Yeah.
Anand, it's a pleasure to have you on board here.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for taking the time. So Anand, before we dive in, right, want to spend some time and understand a bit more about Vertiv. Mm-hmm. What do they do?
Yeah. Well, I think the simplest way to talk about Vertiv, and I do this to all my new hires in our boot camp, I say we keep the world running.
Okay.
I think it sounds a little pompous, but it's true. Really, I mean, if you think about today's world, everything is driven by data, right? Everything is a critical system. So as you think about critical infrastructure, we basically enable that. We provide the power and cooling for digital critical infrastructure. I know it sounds like a mouthful, but basically you have the compute stack, you have the telecommunication stack. All of that requires power and cooling, right? So that's what we provide at a high level. We also provide infrastructure solutions. When you start thinking about where that goes, you can look at a large data center, a place where you process data, store it, transmit it.
Yep.
You have thousands of servers all in big racks, right? So there's a lot of power that's required. So we provide the power, everything we call from grid to chip.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of heat that's generated. So we provide the cooling to take away that heat. And we provide services around it. It is not an afterthought. It's part of the core business, right? So that's what we do. But critical infrastructure also extends to things like semiconductor plants, things like radar installations in an airport, hospitals. So anything that requires critical power to be on all the time, we're there.
Oh, fabulous. And Anand, if I look at the last year, it's public knowledge, but you've seen stellar growth.
Mm-hmm.
Could you just talk a bit about what were the drivers for this growth?
Yeah, the biggest driver obviously was related to AI, right? So you know, with the launch of generative AI, what happened is there's a significant increase in the amount of demand for GPUs and new types of chips. These chips required a lot more power to be delivered to them in a rack. So what we call densification. So historically, the amount of power that went into a rack could be 3, 4, 5, 6, 10 kilowatts.
Right.
Okay, in 2 years, that's gone up to 140, 150 kilowatts per rack. It's projected to go to 600 to a megawatt in a rack, right? So significant shift in the amount of power that's required for this compute stack for AI, and likewise cooling. So those were the drivers for our growth, and we were well positioned for it.
Absolutely. And then just thinking about Vertiv and the overall industrial sector. Now, the industrial sector is huge, multiple different segments, sub-segments, very different kind of companies. If I focus about Vertiv in that entire space, how does Vertiv differentiate itself, and especially in this era of unprecedented AI-led growth?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, we always joke about it. A lot of our history and heritage is obviously Liebert as a company, which is the founding company.
Yeah.
Acquired by Emerson, then Emerson exited us, and here we are as Vertiv. In that transformation, we've also gone from being an industrial to be more a tech company, right? I mean, so when you say what's happened to us, really, you know, that's been a big pivot, right? We are not just an industrial anymore. We are really a tech industrial. Okay, and the profile changes. You know, all the things that you talk about in the titanium economy apply to us. You know, trained technicians, advanced manufacturing. You know, what's happening right here in the Americas, you know, the growth of manufacturing here, how do you support this new compute stack, right?
Yeah.
We're in the midst of all of that. And it's led with technology, led with innovation. We are doing so much design work now, which gets us ahead of the competition, right? So we're not just an industrial company, we're really a technology company enabling the critical infrastructure of today's world.
Yeah, that's a very interesting topic. Now, just to sort of focus a bit more about the strategy part of it, right? As you think about the AI landscape, right? How would you summarize what your strategy is now and going forward in this evolving world?
It's really, really very simple. The first problem statement that happened as, you know, this current generation of silicon and chips came into existence was we have so much heat to take out from so little space, right? So the first problem was, guys, who's the world's foremost expert in handling this? And it was us. So people came to Vertiv and said, you know, precision cooling was invented by Liebert 65 years ago. That's a heritage. But here we are as the foremost company could solve that problem. But as we started doing that, we realized that there was a very close correlation between the load profile, the power profile of how a GPU or a chip behaves today and the amount of power that's required in that space. So the power and cooling piece started interacting. And you start thinking systems. So our strategy basically is saying, guys, how do we ensure we work so closely with the ecosystem, with the silicon providers, with the hyperscalers, with the colos, to make sure the infrastructure is always ready to be two generations ahead of when the silicon comes, right? So that innovation drives it. And then you couple that with scale. You know, you need to be able to rapidly grow around the world, global, and services integral to it. It's not an afterthought. So when you put those things together, that's the magic formula.
Got it. I like the word precision cooling.
Yeah.
We use precision in a lot of industrial terms, but that's the first time. Now, you spoke about data centers. Now, that's been a pillar of growth for you, right? And Vertiv's integrated data center portfolio stands out.
Yeah.
Could you talk to a bit about what has been your strategy in building out that portfolio?
It's actually really deep customer relationships. When you're so close to your customer, you're talking to them all the time across the ecosystem, you understand what are the unmet needs, right? I talked about the fact that as you look across the thermal chain, you need to understand what it takes for you to take the heat from the chip to the cold plate, out into the rack, into the row, into the room, into the atmosphere, right? Likewise, the power comes in from the grid or energy source, could be something other than the grid, which is happening more and more, all the way into the chip. So you get the powertrain and the thermal chain, and the interaction between the two is really critical. So there are very few companies in the world that can do that.
Yeah.
And as we started doing it, we started identifying that there is more and more of a convergence between what's happening in the white space, which is basically everything around the rack, and what's happening in the broader infrastructure, right? There's also a huge shortage of skilled manpower. There's a lot more need for speed and scale. The unit of compute is now an entire AI factory. Right, so we said, guys, how do we enable an AI factory? And which is what led us to saying, guys, how do you create a solution set that you can deploy with speed and scale globally, ensure high quality, high reliability, which led to our infrastructure solutions, one core solution.
Very, very interesting. And I think just shifting our focus on some of the areas of opportunity, right? Now, just continuing with the AI thread. Now, AI-driven growth is the fundamental driver right now. As you think about the future, which part of that AI ecosystem do you expect to accelerate more versus what you've already seen?
Yeah, so the first generation of build-out was really people building out the large training models.
Yeah.
Right? That's a given.
That's a given.
You know, you had to go out and build these mega campuses which are able to create the LLMs that are backbone of AI, right? So that's happening. But the monetization then starts happening when enterprises use it, when consumers use it, right? I'm sure you have multiple, you know, whatever your favorite is of a program that you're using to drive AI usage, right?
Yeah.
So we have our own versions of that. So we're seeing all of that. So across the ecosystem, started with the hyperscalers, obviously the large colos who built for the hyperscalers. Now you're seeing more and more enterprises. Mm-hmm. You're seeing the IT alliances, people around the world who are deploying it for others. And now we're seeing customers thinking of on-prem. Some of them started with AI labs, but you know, the usual suspects, right? Look at financial institutions, look at healthcare, look at federal, right? Look at retail. People have large proprietary data sets. The whole thing is sovereign, right? So we're seeing it across the board. And I think the mix will shift. We'll continue to see the build outs of the large language models, but you'll also see more, you know, private data clouds. You're going to see more inferencing on the edge. So it's across the spectrum.
Very interesting. And I think as you think about this demand going forward, right? And then you've looked at both organic capacity expansion and inorganic. I think, could you talk to the factors that you take into account when you decide, hey, are we going to do this organically or are we going to look at an M&A opportunity?
Yeah. So at a macro level, obviously, it's a portfolio discussion, right? Saying, guys, okay, how do you deploy capital? The organic part is relatively straightforward. you know, Gio and the leadership team, we have a very structured process for our PSYOP. And then we sit down and say, guys, okay, this is what we're seeing in terms of our pipelines and demand. And then you go back and do scenario planning based on that, right? We also have an aspiration for share gain in select markets. How do we go and drive that growth? So based on that, we come up with saying, guys, okay, we need to provision for X amount of capacity. Or we're spending so much money on innovation. These are all the new products that we're creating. Yeah. Based on that, what do we should be our fair share, right? So that piece is the easy part. So that leads to your organic investments. You look at working with customers on specific programs. You look at geographic locations. You look at product sets. And you work through your competitive environment. The usual, you know, classic, you know, business strategy and discussion. The inorganic part is also interesting because, you know, we have a strong balance sheet. We generate cash. Yeah. We can deploy that cash effectively. So we get to see a lot of potential targets. And we are very selective. You know, first of all, it's a very disciplined process. So you know, don't caught up in the ego of how much you want to spend. But guys, is it worthwhile? If especially when you're looking at adjacencies where you can grow, or you can accelerate organic growth by having an add-on that gives you an edge, right? Yeah. So there's a very strategic rationale for it. And that's how we go. And that you can see that in our acquisitions. Right? The whole white space piece with Great Lakes. Or the services piece with Purjet, especially on liquid cooling. When you go back and look at digital services, look at analytics, look at orchestration, you know, how do you optimize data centers? Vele. So that's how those pieces came into place.
Now, that's interesting. I think, moving into the second question which you laid, like services, right? Like your acquisition of Vele and Purjet, right? Basically put services front and center.
Yeah.
Can you talk about like, what is your vision for services and how has investment thesis changed going forward in the past year?
Yeah, services is always a superpower. The good news or how you want to look at it, I ran services in Asia and India for many years. Gio ran it in Europe before his president role, before my president role in Asia. So very close to it. It's a key part of a value proposition for our customers. Right? When we sell an equipment or a solution, it's expected to work reliably over 15, 20 years, So we have that close intimacy with our customers. We have more than 4,000 service engineers around the world. We have more than 300 locations from which we operate, right? So that's key to our core, to our success and growth. As you're looking at the huge growth in our business, you want to make sure that you're growing services to retain your proximity to that customer in the same ratio. And the richness of our services now with liquid cooling, with what we're seeing with medium voltage, what we're seeing with ERS-HVM, which is a different part of our business that deals with electrical reliability services or high voltage maintenance, allow us to ensure that we continue to stay ahead of the curve, right? So that's where these acquisitions came about. And the next game here now is, how do you drive digital twins? How do you drive, you know, optimization? How are you using AI to be predictive and condition-based maintenance? How do you get ahead of the curve, right? So that's where we're getting into. And many of our customers now are deploying around the world. They're looking at standard models. So you get into this whole life cycle optimization, as well as how are you able to orchestrate across their fleet. So there's a lot more work happening around that.
That's very interesting. Now, as you talk about innovation for the customers and standardization, I think the next question is pretty much R&D, right? So could you talk a bit about how R&D is shaping your competitive advantage in the market and what changes can we expect going forward?
You know, as we became Vertiv and, you know, one of the key tenets of Dave's leadership philosophy was always that you got to invest ahead of the curve. No matter what you do with fixed costs, you continue to accelerate your investments in R&D. Right, so that was a huge boost. So we've been doing that for several years now. And actually, if you look at this year and next year, probably upwards of 20% CAGR in our ER&D spend, right? That's really driving our innovation agenda. The number of new products we're launching every year today is a multiple factor of what we used to in the past. We've also compressed the time cycle. This is very, very key. If you look at the chip time cycle now, you're seeing a generation of chips coming out every year, right? Yeah. Our business was not in a one-year cycle for new product introductions. Well, we've compressed that. The 12-month cycle for us to be able to develop and launch a new product creates huge advantage for us. So R&D is at the center of innovation. And then when we do that, we also look at it in terms of global manufacturability, being able to be nimble with your supply chains, scalability, serviceability, right? So that gives the customers confidence that working with us will get them a solution that's innovative, but also that can be deployed and supported for years to come.
Oh, that's interesting. About the whole morphing of industrial R&D cycle with the semi cycles, which
exactly
are faster
right.
and
exactly
and hopefully not as capex intensive, but it's a marked change as you spoke about. Now, demand surges. AI is here to stay.
Yeah.
Right? Demand surges will happen. Now, as you think about the future, what trends and what kind of metrics are you keeping an eye on in terms of what changes in the market?
Yeah. You know, two viewpoints here. The metrics are the easier ones, right? Clearly, like I talked about before, we have our pipeline. So you start with the pipeline and say, guys, what am I seeing in my pipeline? And the way we look at our pipeline is it's a qualified pipeline. When a salesperson comes in with an opportunity, we put it in the pipeline, but then we go back and say, guys, okay, does that customer have land and power? Is the customer doing it for themselves? Are they building for others? In which case, do they have an anchor tenant? Do they have capital, right? So you go through a qualification process, it gives you some confidence in the shape of that pipeline, right? So we can look at the growth in the pipeline, we can look at the time to close, we can look at win and loss rates. So that gives us a perspective on what we are seeing, okay? So that's the easy part. The second part of it is you go back and validate externally. Saying, guys, okay, the customers are deploying, what silicon are they deploying? So we know all the flavors, right? We know the players in the industry. Yeah. So you go back and add those flavors up and say, okay, based on what they're telling us, it's in the order of magnitude of gigawatts, right? That gives you a second metric. So you get two checkpoints. And the third piece then for us is to go back and say, guys, what is our ability to ramp up or down? So as we're seeing that flexing point, okay, are we investing ahead? How far ahead? If not, can we kind of get capacity in place at the right times, right? So all of that happens. The good news is that, we've all been through multiple cycles in our life, right? Like you said, I spent a lot of time in Asia. Yeah. I went through the 97, global crisis. We went through the 2000.com, SARS. We went through the next 2008, COVID, right? So you get those cycles. Some of it is technology-driven, some of it is macro-driven, some of it is random, events. But this one feels a little different. I think while there might be ups and downs, I think fundamentally, this is the beginning of the next, industrial revolution in some ways, right? The digital revolution. So it has legs to it.
Got it. Oh, exciting times, Anand. I think before we let you go, more on a personal note, if you've had 3+ decades of experience in the industrial and the tech sector, right? In your own journey, what has been the most defining moment in terms of the leadership or the leader that has shaped?
Interesting. At heart, I'm still a middle class Indian boy who kind of grew up and went out, right? So a lot of my values have been shaped by my parents. I've also been lucky to have great mentors. When I was in Hong Kong, I had a phenomenal boss. Likewise, in Hong Kong, Singapore, it's always been about kind of stepping out and thinking, what can you do as a leader, right? Mm-hmm. What's going to be your legacy? How can you do good for the world? So that defines it in some ways. You can call it your purpose or whatever else. And for me, leadership has always been about enabling my team. How do you make sure that they're empowered? How do you make sure that, you're motivating them to have impact? How do you drive growth, but it's purpose-led? Otherwise, growth for the sake of growth is easy.
That's true.
But you got to make sure that it has a meaning to it. And do all of that with humility.
Fabulous. Well, Anand, thank you for this very candid podcast. It's our pleasure to have you.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Titanium Economy Podcast. To learn more, share feedback, and stay up to date, please visit titaniumeconomy.com.